Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of our historical podcast. Once again, you join myself, Matt Nelson, and my co-host, Wayne Bridgman.
Yes, thanks, Matt. Today, we'll be talking about a ruler.
Oh.
An individual. Not necessarily a great ruler, but a memorable ruler, Matt. He's remembered for some pretty terrible things, though, and they allow him to take the insanity cake hands down.
More like a fruitcake.
That's the sort of cake it would be. This guy puts the capital C, R, A, Z, and Y in crazy. He was mad, bad, and pretty dangerous to know.
Very mad, very bad, and actually I think I'll say very mad again.
Yeah.
Just to drive the point home. Indeed, this Roman emperor was very probably the worst of a breed, well known for their irrationality, paranoia, and extravagant ways.
Yeah, they were. And so, with that in mind, today, we're going to talk about a man whose name still echoes down the ages as an unsettling intimation, Matt, of indeed, just how badly power can corrupt.
And of course, power being the great evil.
That's right.
As well as money.
This guy's name was Caligula. Mm. Now, I should warn you that this episode comes with a warning. So those that are easily disturbed or perhaps prone to wetting themselves should listen with care.
Okay, I'm listening.
Okay, thank you. For some of the things you'll hear today may not be to the liking of your delicate senses. But serious, actually, if you do have small kids or something within earshot, maybe just brush them off to one side.
Yeah. And that is actually, now that is perhaps an understatement. The depravity, and believe me, it was depravity, would make even some well-known MPs blush.
Allegedly, it would.
To give you an insight into his life, the most famous on-screen depiction of Caligula's life is still banned. Bearing in mind, this is 2015 now. Canada
banned.
And Iceland.
Banned, wow, okay.
In 1979, the film Caligula, directed by Tito Brass, and starring Malcolm McDowell, shocked the world with its explicit portrayal of the Emperor's cruel and salacious escapades.
That's right, yeah. It was the first major motion picture that juxtaposed segments featuring respected mainstream actors with scenes that were effectively just top shelf stuff. You know, it's just like porn, basically. After reading that review of it, I did watch it. And it was pretty shocking, I've got to say. I was actually genuinely shocked by it.
I then watched it because you said how shocked you were about it. And I was also genuinely shocked by it.
Yeah. Well,
even though I knew what was coming, quite literally.
Yeah, everyone was. So, to this day, the highly controversial movie, it still remains banned, as you say.
Yes.
But the shocking thing was, at the time when it was released, was how close the film actually came, sorry to use that word again, to the reality of the day.
Yeah.
You know, in Imperial Rome under the then sadistic emperor of Rome, Tiberius, and the batshite crazy Caligula.
Yeah, and that maybe is the scariest thing, is it's not fiction. Oof. Although, I mean, I'm sure some of the film was fiction. You know, the reality is it did lend itself to reality.
Hideous.
So a reason, if any, is needed. Power should be earned and not inherited.
That's right. Very wise.
Roll on the monarchy dice. So evens you get Augustus, and odds you get Caligula.
He was certainly very odd.
So to make it clear, this film is not to be watched with the grandparents after a Sunday roast.
No.
In fact, having a roast in Caligula's eyes had nothing to do with roast beef and all the trimmings.
Oof.
Now, Caligula, Wayne, did you know it was a nickname?
Yes.
Well, it was given to him by the legionaries of the army commanded by his father, Germanicus. His real name was Gaius.
Gaius.
What?
Gaius, good one.
No, that was his real name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
His father, Germanicus, was an incredibly popular and successful general and talked about in the same whispers as Alexander the Great by some of the Romans.
Yeah.
So the young Gaius would go on campaign with his father and live in the Roman forts. His mother dressed him in a boy's version of a Roman legionary uniform.
That's nice.
And I can imagine he looked very cute.
Yeah, tiny little young killer. That's nice.
Yes, lovely. Anyway, the legionaries had him as a sort of mascot and called Gaius Caligula, which means
Little Boots, isn't it? Bootikins.
Yeah. And because of a small child, he liked to parade around in camp on the Rhine frontier dressed as a legionary.
Yeah. They were the military sandals, weren't they?
Yes.
The little military sandals, the little studded military sandals the soldiers wore, were called Caligulae.
Caligulae.
That's why it was, yeah.
Yes, you see, and they adored him, and he was always popular with the soldiers. He was popular with the people later, too.
To start with, yes.
Yeah, partly because he did the whole sort of bread and circuses thing very well.
Yeah, well, by bread and circuses, Matt means to keep the power base in Rome happy. The power base meaning, you know, the mob, the blebs. Yeah. A successful leader would make sure they were fed and entertained so they'd not notice how bad their life was. Distract them,
idea.
You know.
Yeah, brilliant idea, yeah.
Yeah, so actually, Matt, fancy coming around later to watch the football, get a pizza in so we can forget about the horrors of the world?
Ha ha! Now that is satire.
His full name was Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus Germanicus.
It must be pretty annoying having a signature that long. No wonder he preferred Caligula.
Yeah. Our listeners may wonder why Romans were so fond of quoting their full names, Matt. I know you are.
Oh, I'm fascinated.
Yeah. Roman names were constructed thus. First, you had the praenomen. That's like the first name, Gaius in this case, or Marcus, Lucius, that sort of thing. There were usually only a few of these, like a few dozen, basically, in general currency. And Plutarch, the historian, even goes so far as to write that 50% of Rome's population shared the three most common praenomens.
So, for example, in England, we'd have just the popular names like Dave, yeah. John, yeah. and Tarquin. So, indeed, then, after the praenom, came the nomen. This was the clan, or extended family, name Julius, Cornelius, yeah. or Tullius, for example. Next, there was the conum.
Oh.
These hereditary nicknames signified a branch of a larger family. So these names could be changed and were subject to change every few generations. Now, Pompey...
The famous one we're talking about.
Yeah. The general Pompey changed his cognomen from Strabo, which was Latin for cross-eyed.
What?
So Pompey the cross-eyed. He went for Magnus, which meant Pompey the Great. He became the legendary Pompey the Great.
Yeah, I can see how Pompey... If you're going to be a general, Pompey the cross-eyed is not going to strike fear into the heart of your enemies, is it?
Yeah.
It doesn't look good on papyrus.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the last part of a Roman name was the agnomen. These names were also hereditary, but usually were adopted after military victories. So, Publius Cornelius Scipio Africanus, can you guess? Took his agnomen from his victories in...
Africa.
During the Second Punic War, of course.
And Caligula's father took Germanicus, part of his name, from his victories in Germany.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Moving on. When you hear of the monster Caligula was to become, it's hard to imagine him as a little kid giggling and totting around the camp while legionaries laugh and fawn at his cuteness. Before we examine Caligula's time in power and his outrageous exploits and sexploits, Matt, let's just set the scene by looking at the events which led up to his time in power here. So, to start off, Caligula was a member of the Julio-Claudian dynasty, ruling from only 37 to 41 AD, Matt. Remember, it goes the other way, AD.
Yes, absolutely. So, the Julio-Claudian dynasty reigned from Julius Caesar's bloodline through to Nero. Nero, being another one of the top five for worst Roman emperors...
He was.
...ended the bloodline and a new dynasty took over. And if I'm right in saying that's the Flavian dynasty that took over from the Claudio...
I'll take your word for it.
It was, yes. So, back to Gaius... Father Germanicus now. The story of Germanicus offers the first key to Gaius's, shall we say, odd personality development.
Yes, we shall.
He was the step-grandson to the Emperor Augustus.
Who was the first emperor before Tiberius, who's currently in power.
Correct. Married to Augustus's granddaughter, a lady called Agrippina, and designated as the heir to his uncle, the Emperor Tiberius, for when he died.
Yeah.
Essentially, he was next in line to wear the purple. So when he died of a mysterious illness...
Yeah, basically, he sort of accidentally contracted a bad case of arsenic poisoning, while out for a long ride.
Correct. Did
it happen to anyone?
It is rumoured, of course, vicious rumour, that Agrippina believed that he'd been poisoned and held the Emperor Tiberius responsible.
Yeah, well, actually, she did air that belief widely.
Mm-hmm.
And her children, as they grew up, became objects of suspicion as a result. Now, whether she plotted against Tiberius is unknown... but she was accused of this, possibly framed by Sejanus, a Praetorian prefect. We'll hear his name again. Although, really, when you look at the grand scheme of things in Rome, that's a relatively low-key exchange of power in the soap opera of Roman power politics.
Yes. And his mother was arrested because of this perceived plotting, and she was exiled. And her two elder sons were also arrested, both of whom later died in prison.
Died in inverted commas, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gaius survived, though, protected by his grandmother, Antonia.
Antonia was the daughter of Mark Antony and Augustus's sister, Octavia. I hope you're following this, listeners.
So clearly Caligula and his family were devastated and believed that Tiberius had not only killed off his father to remove him as a threat, he'd exiled his mother, and now his two brothers were dead, imprisoned by Tiberius.
Yeah, to paint the picture here, Tiberius was actually, he's a very paranoid guy. He was too scared to live within Rome itself because of the threats of assassination. You know, he was pretty ineffectual, this guy, really, not very popular. So as a result, he hid away on the island of Capri, in a palace, in a remote, sort of hard-to-reach fortress, high hill-style sort of location. A bit like a Bond villain. And lived a depraved and debauched life within its walls.
Yes, Dr. No morals. Now, no doubt the horrendous demise of his closest relatives must have had a profound effect on the young Caligula. How could it not?
Yeah, exactly. Attempting to rid himself of Gaius, the ambitious Sejanus...
Who was the Praetorian prefect.
Yeah, that's right. Under the belief that he may be a potential successor, went too far and was ultimately arrested and put to death by orders of Emperor Tiberius in AD 31. Not quite sure what he got up to there, but obviously he got caught, whatever it was he was doing, wasn't acceptable, dead. In that same year, Caligula was invested as a priest, believe it or not.
And from AD 32 onwards, he was summoned to live on the island of Capri, in the emperor's lush residence, and was appointed joint heir with Tiberius Gemellus. That was Tiberius's son. This must have worried Caligula, though. Already, he can perceive that all his family members have been killed by Tiberius. Is he next?
Well, and also, if he's living in that palace in Capri, if the film's anything to go by, you know, it's pretty pretty bad place for a youngster to be spending his time.
Well, not only that, he was invited there. He must have wondered if he was going to be killed on sight or tortured. You know, he was summoned there, he arrived on his own, and he was not allowed to leave unless Tiberius allowed it. And what Tiberius wants, Tiberius gets.
I bet he did.
To give you an example, Tiberius... So to give you an example, Tiberius, who lived in his Bond villain palace on top of the hill, as we mentioned before, the palace was next to a 1,000-foot drop off a cliff onto rocks. And the cliff got the nickname Tiberius's Leap. Anyone he disliked was thrown off the edge. Men, women, children. You didn't have to be a criminal to suffer this fate. Just anyone that upset him, or if he needed amusement, you were fair game. Wrong place, wrong time.
Bomb. Oh dear, well, and that was just a taster, Matt. A whole catalogue of nastiness occurred under the total power and authority of Tiberius on Capri.
Animal, mineral, vegetable.
Anything was fair game as far as this guy was concerned. But Matt, surely this would have shocked the young Caligula?
You'd have thought so, but alas, no. He was trapped and could not leave the island and soon began to join in the games and debauchery with Tiberius.
When in Rome...
He learns that life is cheap and worthless, and the pursuit of pleasure is key. He actually identifies with Tiberius, the man who killed his family and holds him captive.
Some have likened this to a kind of Stockholm Syndrome. Caligula now seeks total power and knows he can get it as a total ruler. I mean, you know, being there with Tiberius in his debauched Paris.
Yeah.
He's thinking, well, why can't I have all this? Yeah. This is great.
He's at a young, impressionable age, and Tiberius is behaving... In a way, maybe Caligula will emulate.
He's behaving like a bloody Roman emperor, for God's sake.
By AD 33, he was made quaestor. Now, though this was given no further administrative training at all, it would make him an excellent candidate for managerial role in the UK public sector as it stands today.
Yeah, and as a man, let's take a look at this guy for a minute. Caligula was very tall, with spindly legs and a thin neck, Matt.
Yeah, well, like a giraffe and a toga.
Yeah, you can paint a beautiful picture. For our listeners, really good. We're told his eyes and temples were sunken, and his forehead was broad and glowering.
Not a great combination for the looks department.
Absolutely not. No. If that's not bad enough, his hair was thin, and he was bald on top.
Sounds potentially for a body double for the Elephant Man, what it sounds of at the moment.
In fact, during his reign, it was a crime punishable by death to look down on him as he passed by, you know, from a balcony or something when there's a parade, or to mention a goat. In his presence.
Well, I can get the bald noggin and what I might feel a bit embarrassed about that, but a goat?
Well, I guess he was taunted about his body hair when he was a kid or teen, or whenever it was he got hairy.
Goat boy. Yeah. All that kind of stuff, yeah. So, well, let's talk about his ascent to power.
Okay, well, one account tells of how Tiberius was thought to have died.
Mm-hmm.
So, Caligula drew the imperial signet ring from the dead Tiberius' finger and was subsequently greeted as emperor by a waiting crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Then, however, news reached the would-be emperor that Tiberius had recovered and was requesting food be brought to him.
Holy moly.
Mm. Friends, Romans, countrymen, it's with great sadness that I must inform you that our beloved emperor has been killed. I mean, has peacefully died in his sleep. Yeah. So, as his only living heir, well, I mean, the only heir fit to take power, I humbly grasp power.
Yes, sir.
What is it, man? Can't you see him busy, you dolt?
Emperor Tiberius seems to have awoken and is making, well, a remarkable recovery.
Right. Two things. Firstly, I'm the bloody emperor here. Secondly, tell Macro to make sure the old fool's comfortable, if you get my meaning.
Yes, sir. I will tell him straight away.
Oh, I feel quite well, Centurion. Thank you. My... That quick drink has a bit of a kick in it, you know. I feel like I'm 20 years old again. Tiberius is back. Ha ha! I'm back!
Right, you old fool. I have a cushion to put your face on.
Should you be putting your cushion to the back of my head? Pussy!
He is a comfortable now, sir. Resting with the gods, so he is.
Jolly good. My people! After Tiberius's unfortunate demise of something, we must take a moment to mourn. Okay. Now I'm going to throw some games! Hooray for me!
So, Caligula, it was rumoured but never proven, was terrified of any revenge by the Emperor Tiberius as he awoke from death and froze in panic, signalling to Macro, his commander of the Praetorians, to rush inside. He duly did this and smothered Tiberius with a cushion, suffocating him to death.
In any case, with the support of Macro, Caligula was immediately held as princeps, which is a first citizen, by the Senate. And we're in AD 37 now.
Mm-hmm.
No sooner did he get back to Rome than the Senate bestowed upon him all the powers of imperial office. Remember, this is not the Republic, Matt. And declaring Tiberius's will invalid, meaning the child Gemellus, who was too young,
who was a joint heir, but yeah, now
was not granted his claim to the joint reign.
Ah. But it was above all the army, which, very loyal to the house of Germanicus, our hero, and Caligula's father, sought to see Caligula as the sole ruler. Caligula moved quickly and quietly and dropped a request for the deification of the deeply unpopular Tiberius, which was generally considered a good move by the Senate. All around Rome, there was much rejoicing at the investment of a new emperor.
Yay.
After the dark years of Caligula's predecessor, especially as Caligula also abolished Tiberius's gruesome treason trials.
Very unpopular.
He paid a generous bequest to the people of Rome and especially a handsome bonus to his bodyguard, the Praetorian Guard.
Not a bad idea.
Yes, and one such story had Caligula on the roof of the Senate building throwing buckets of coins.
Sesterces.
For the waiting crowd, and they lapped it up and they cheered for Caligula whilst he laughed manically, tossing the coins down.
So, it all started off so well, Matt. It certainly sounds like it. And the scene was set. Caligula at this time looked to be pretty much a godsend to the people after the terrible, you know, sort of like stagnant years
of Tiberius.
Of Tiberius's yes. rule. So, although generous in apparent spirit, many of his early acts were likely to be political in nature.
Well, he was popular, and he was making the right decisions as far as the people of Rome were concerned.
Mm.
The crowd initially hailed him as our star.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Our baby.
A bit weird.
Of course, only 24 years old. Oh, so yeah. He's inherited the most popular role and the largest empire known to man. And he was described as the first emperor who would be admired by everyone. Yeah. And in quote, all the world from the rising to the setting sun.
Wow. Well, according to Suetonius, during this time, over 160,000 animals were sacrificed during 3 months of public rejoicing to usher in the new reign.
Wow. Those Romans certainly knew how to party.
Yeah.
The signs were looking good.
Well, do you like to sort of slaughter animals at parties?
No. No, okay. But that's...
Different times.
I'm not a Roman. So the signs were looking good. Caligula published accounts of public funds.
Brilliant.
Which had not been made public during the previous reign of Tiberius. He also aided those who lost property in fires.
Good, yeah.
Abolished certain taxes and gave
always
up glittering
good.
Prizes in a public gymnastics
event.
He also allowed new members into the equestrian and senatorial orders, which is always good for promoting change.
Of course. Well, he made very significant change to restoring the practice of democratic elections. They're back.
Yeah, although it's not all bad, is he?
Well, even at the start of his rule, there were some worrying warning signs, Matt.
Yes.
Exhibited by the young emperor. You know the one about the pontoon bridge thing?
Oh, yes, I do, but, you know, the listeners probably don't.
Well, he had a pontoon bridge built leading across from the Sea of Baiae to Puzzuoli. I think I've got that pronounced right, I don't know. That's a stretch of water 2.5 miles long. I mean, this bridge was apparently built
that's
from boats.
That's a long way.
It's a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, we know these guys are great engineers.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you can't write it off completely. This bridge was built from boats lashed together and covered with earth. And with this bridge in place, Caligula then, in the entire of a Thracian gladiator, amongst other things, as this went on, mounted a horse and rode across it. Why not?
Yeah, well, that's right. And then once he arrived at the far end, he got off his horse and returned on a chariot drawn by two horses.
Mm.
These crossings are said to have lasted for 2 days.
Wow.
The historian Suetonius explains this bizarre behaviour, because let's face it, that is pretty bizarre.
Mm.
But it was down to a prediction that was made by the astrologer called... Now, I'm going to murder this name.
Trasylus, wasn't it?
Trasylus, to Emperor Tiberius, saying Caligula had no more chance of becoming emperor than crossing the Sea of Baiae on horseback.
Okay, so he's making a point.
Yes, I think he is. So, not a crazy thing, but maybe, yeah... Definitely likes to make a point.
Well, a 2.5 mile pontoon bridge? I don't know about it. A bit of artistic license, maybe. Anyway, apparently during that exercise, he was also supposed to have put on the breastplate of Alexander the Great.
Wow, Alexander.
While he paraded night and day for those 2 days across the bay, and he also threw, at that time, lavish orgies and light of bonfires. It started.
He was intelligent but wayward, and power soon went to his head. He was, after all, only 24, as we said. His sense of humour was playful and cheeky. Once at a dinner party, he burst out laughing. On being asked to share a joke, he said...
Oh, my, what a thought!
What is it, glorious Emperor Caligula?
Well, you know, you're going... You're going to love this. I've just had a thought that I've only got to give the word... And you will have your throats cut. Isn't that fantastic, Claudius?
Yes, your emperor-ness. More wine for you.
Yes, Claudius. Don't worry. I'm sure cutting your throat won't improve that ridiculous stutter of yours.
Okay.
What?
Thank you, Imperator.
Okay. Charming, if true. Now, let's take a look at some of his tangible physical achievements now, shall we, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
Despite financial difficulty at the time, Caligula embarked on a number of construction projects, some for the public, some for himself.
Yes, he built various temples.
Like the Temple of Augustus.
Theatres.
Like the Theatre of Pompey.
He had the Imperial Palace extended, and he began work on the famous engineering marvels of the Roman aqueducts.
Impressive.
What do the Romans ever do for us? He built a huge racecourse named the Circus of Gaius and Nero, plus had a Vatican obelisk put in its place.
That was the one transported by sea?
Yes.
From Egypt, yeah?
Yes.
He also repaired the great city walls at Syracuse, huge, great, big, important city at the time,
mm-hmm.
And the temples of the gods in the same place as well. He had many new roads built, as well as pushing for the upkeep of existing roads and infrastructure, very important. He also wanted to found a city high up in the Alps, plus many other projects too numerous to mention here.
See, now I do want to talk about these two ships he had built for himself, which were recovered from the bottom of Lake Nemi during the dictatorship of Mussolini during the 1930s.
That's right.
The ships were among the largest vessels in the ancient world. The larger ship was essentially an elaborate floating palace, a bit of an ego extension. It had marble floors,
something
heating,
extension,
baths, plumbing, including cold water, drinking fountains, etc. This place was absolutely first class, out of this world, and it was a huge indulgent ship that Caligula bought and built for himself.
Yeah, just one year after being launched, actually, the ships were stripped of precious objects, ballasted, and intentionally sunk following the assassination of Caligula. Unfortunately, after they were unearthed in the 1930s, World War II bombed, destroyed. Terribly sad.
That's sad. Any pictures?
There are pictures, actually.
Yeah. Well, at least we've
you
got
go online and see them.
It's quite a good thing to look at, if that's your thing. So, the good times in the early months did not last forever. Caligula was soon to fall very ill.
Yeah.
Just 6 months after taking power in AD 37. Mm. His popularity was such that his illness caused great concern throughout the entire empire.
Oh.
But when Caligula recovered, he was no longer the same man.
Yeah.
And Rome would be soon to find itself in a living nightmare.
Yeah. According to the historian Suetonius again, Caligula had suffered from epilepsy since childhood.
As some thought Julius Caesar had.
Yeah. And in fact, epilepsy was known as, in Roman times, as the parliamentary disease, since it was regarded as an essentially bad omen if anyone had a fit while public business was being conducted. And as you say, Caligula's very distant cousin, Julius Caesar, did also allegedly suffer from occasional attacks. This, or some other cause, violently affected his mental state after his illness, and he became pretty much, if you believe the sources, totally irrational, with delusions not only of grandeur, but of divinity.
Divinity, wow. And now suffered from chronic inability to sleep as well, managing only a few hours of sleep a night, during which he suffered from horrendous nightmares.
You know what that's like.
So apparently he would often wander through the palace waiting for daylight. This reminds me of when I first saw A Nightmare on Elm Street at the age of about 17.
Oh, yeah.
And I also
had
awake, sleepless
sleep.
Nights, didn't want to sleep.
Yeah.
The mental torment, coupled with extreme pressures of ruling the empire, must have drove him over the edge.
Yeah.
He also drank huge amounts of wine. Now, the wine at the time was fermented in lead-lined pots.
Uh-oh.
And it's believed that the excessive drinking of this particular wine would form a kind of lead poisoning that could cause illness and also hallucinations.
Yeah. That kind of lead poisoning being lead poisoning. And I'll also chip in here with a quote by Philo. He was an Egyptian-born Jewish philosopher who was alive at the time, actually, of Caligula's rule.
Yes.
And this quote is translated from his script named on the embassy to Gaius. And I think, unfortunately, our resident historian, Professor Harrington, is, he's drunk, actually. He's not available today. So we're going to go over to our new historian, Professor Hamilton. So over to you for the quote.
Thanks very much, and really pleased to be here. Quote, please. The madness and frenzy to which he gave way were so preposterous and utterly insane that he went even beyond the demigod mounted up.
Sorry, just tone it down a bit.
Tone it lower? Yeah, okay, no problem. Yeah. And invaded the veneration and worship paid to those who looked upon as greater than they, as the supreme deities of the world, Mercury, Apollo, and Mars.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just go.
I still get paid,
out. For a philosopher, he certainly isn't beating around the bush there. This is the same Philo, actually, who described the first months of Caligula's rule as completely blissful.
Actually, I have a philosopher's joke for you. Do you want to hear it?
Well, I guess.
How many Freudians does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know.
Two. One to chain the bulb, and the other to hold the willy. I mean the ladder.
Matt, Freud was a psychologist, not a philosopher.
Ah. Well, you get the idea. Anyway,
yeah.
Back to the subject at hand.
Oh, Freudian slip.
What was going on in this chap's head? Caligula displayed signs of abnormality at an early age. He was caught ravaging his sister, eating cats alive.
What the hell? He couldn't have been feline normal.
Yes, he must have been kittening himself. He thought he could get away with that. And pleasuring himself in public.
Oh, fair enough.
And overall being an odd youth. Some say the only reason he made emperor is because the previous ruler, Tiberius, wanted to be remembered as a great ruler. And so he decided the only way to do that was to put someone in charge so bad that would make him look good.
Well, the crazy scale quickly unbalanced and toppled over, Matt, when Caligula was said to have believed that he was the god Zeus.
Ah.
And married his sister, who he called Hera. I mean, why not? They were the old Greek god and wife that Caligula admired so much.
Yes, and many of the Romans did. In AD 38, Caligula put to death, without trial, his principal supporter, the Praetorian prefect, well, Macro.
We said earlier he was dangerous to know.
Yeah, he was one that, as we remember, suffocated Tiberius. In fact, he accused Macro of being a pimp for his wife, with whom he was having an affair with, and ordered him to commit suicide.
Oh, God.
He wasn't happy with that, though. The young Tiberius Gemellus, the other soon-to-be joint heir, or supposed to be joint heir, suffered the same fate, ordered to commit suicide.
God.
I think he was age 14 at the time.
Nasty.
Marcus Junius Silanus, the father of the first of Caligula's wife, was also compelled to commit suicide.
Ooh. Well, Caligula continued to become even more unbalanced, Matt, if you can imagine that. Seeing the emperor ordering an altar to be built for himself was worrying to Romans. But to propose that statues of himself should be erected in synagogues was more than merely worrying. It was likely to cause a revolution. Caligula's excesses knew no bounds, and he soon introduced heavy taxation, here it comes, to help pay for his personal expenditure.
Yes.
He also created a new tax on ladies of pleasure, and is said to have opened a brothel in the wing of the imperial palace itself. Many of the Romans actually were very proud and prude, and this would have offended their morals, this sort of behaviour.
Yeah. And all these occurrences naturally alarmed the Senate. By now, there was no doubt that the emperor of the civilised world was in fact a dangerous madman.
Yeah.
Confirming their worst fears, in AD 39, Caligula announced the revival of the feared and hated treason trials of Tiberius's time.
God.
The bloodthirsty trials, which had given an air of terror to the later years of Tiberius's reign, it was thought that he had burnt all of the trial information.
That's right.
When he came to power, and that was a big celebration. Well, thanks for that, Caligula. It was brilliant. But actually, he only burned them once he'd made copies. And now he got out the copies, and he started to persecute and prosecute people under those same trials.
Oh, no.
Now, these trials were at best ambiguous in their nature, and often would result in the death of the accused, or were deeply deeply feared by those who lived in Rome.
And rightfully so. Caligula had been accused of the most awesomely disgusting, insane, luridly depraved crimes against humanity and morality, and I'm sorry to say that the accusations do appear to be widely accepted as true, Matt.
Yeah.
So, let's take a look at some of the other acts the man committed as he continued his reign and brought a season ticket for the crazy train to Insanity Central.
Yeah!
He began ordering the murders of anyone who had ever crossed him, or even disagreed with him on mundane matters. He had a very good memory and bore a grudge very well indeed. He exiled his own wife, proclaimed himself as various gods. In addition to Zeus, he was dressing up as Apollo, Venus.
Actually a goddess, of course, but who doesn't like to dress up, Matt?
That's very true. Hello. And then there was Mercury and Hercules. He demanded that everyone, from senators, guards, to guests and public crowds, would refer to him as divine in his presence.
Oh, right, okay. Bit of a big head.
Mm.
Once, actually, this is terrible, this one, during the games at the Circus Maximus, the event ran out of criminals to butcher, but the next event was the lions. That's his favourite. So he did what any self-respecting lunatic would do, and ordered his guards to drag out the first few rows of spectators, dump them in the arena, which they did.
Presumably the poor ones.
Well, who knows? You know, it's probably cost money to get front row seats, isn't it? So,
jeez.
And these hundreds of people were then devoured for his amusement. Hilarious.
Well, amazingly, though, Wayne, the mob actually enjoyed these games, and they cheered on the spectacle.
Oh, God.
Though I suspect the Senate, on the other hand, hated and feared him in equal measure.
Well, I don't think that was a problem for Caligula by now, as he was quoted by Suetonius as saying, "Let them hate us, so long as they fear us."
And this guy suddenly was paranoid. Now, Wayne, let me paint a picture for you. Imagine coming to a dinner party with your girlfriend.
Okay. The host, that's easy.
The host, yes, not that hard to imagine.
Yeah,
that's
not too bad.
The host then, you know, says hi, takes your coats, gives you a drink.
Okay, cool.
He says to your girlfriend, "I'm just going to take your girlfriend upstairs."
They get up to no good upstairs.
Comes down.
Not that happy.
You can't do much about that, because if you did, you'd get your throat slit.
I would.
Yeah. That's what it was like to go to a dinner party at Caligula's. And he would come down and he'd sit around the table and he would boast about what just happened upstairs to the guests, and they weren't allowed to say anything or do anything for fear of death.
Well, he was a psychopath.
He was. He was beginning to get dangerously out of control.
Well, as indeed are many who whom have taken power for themselves and who know perhaps they do not deserve it. Did you know, it's also alleged, Matt, that Caligula drank pearls dissolved in vinegar. Why? Because he could, Matt. Because he could.
Same like a dog. Right. A citizen once insulted him to his face in a fit of rage, which is a pretty stupid thing to
do. Or brave.
Could be brave. And Caligula responded by having him tied down, beaten with heavy chains. He made this last for 3 months. 3 months. Not 3 hours, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months. Having the man brought to him out of the dungeon and beaten until Caligula and the whole crowd had gathered were so offended by the smell of the man's gangrenous state, whereupon he was beheaded.
Well, took a while for the mercy to come there.
Yeah.
You weren't joking earlier when you said he bore a grudge well.
Yeah.
Caligula's favourite torture...
I mean, this guy actually had a favourite form of torture?
Yeah, was sawing. I mean, we won't go into too much detail here, but let's just say Caligula didn't often leave a victim in one piece. And he wasn't beyond chewing on a man's private parts, himself, as a form of torture either.
Man, it's amazing he was in power for as long as he was, if he was getting up to this sort of thing. And he had another insulter. And this time he got his entire family publicly executed, one after another, in front of the crowd. The man and his wife were first, followed by their oldest child, and so on.
God,
horrid. The crowd became outraged and began to disperse, but many stayed in morbid fascination.
My God. Well, I think this is getting a bit gruesome now, so let's move on to some of the other crazy stunts he pulled. For example, he publicly had carnal relations, shall we say, with his three sisters at banquets and games, sometimes on the table amid the food.
Yeah, it's like a Queen or Rolling Stones party.
It's going to put you off your Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. He also attempted to instate his favourite horse, Incitatus.
That means galloper.
Yeah. As priest and consul.
Yeah.
And ordered a beautiful marble stable built for him, complete with chairs and couches, of which Incitatus could never sit on because he's a horse.
He's a horse, yeah.
In a bizarre way, this is kind of the bit I like about Caligula. It's kind of funny insanity. He also sent soldiers out the night before a race to ensure the surrounding area was kept quiet, so as not to upset Incitatus and spoil his sleep. Disturbing equine beast sleep was, of course, punishable by
death.
Obviously, it's Caligula's horse.
As you said, it's quite funny, this sort of madness, yeah. Now, that sounds crazy on the face of it, but it may have been that, you know, as a bit of a megalomaniac, Caligula could have been making the point, this whole horse thing, that power lay with him. And by appointing his horse as a consul, he was actually demonstrating to the populace that the Senate was as effective governing Rome as a stable of horses. Why not just chuck a horse in there? It's not going to make any difference.
Mm, yeah.
And these sort of things, you know, could have been lost in translation a bit over the years.
Yes, it's all his subtext, isn't it? And let's remember, history is written by the winners, not the people that are assassinated and considered to be one of the worst emperors. So, interesting. So, you think that some of the crazier accounts, if true, he may have been trying to make a point.
Yeah, so, for example, he was said to have declared war on Neptune, the Roman god of the sea, and he had his soldiers actually stab the sea with their swords.
Neptune's forces came at them in waves and waves. It was a massacre.
Yeah, I see What you did there?
After the initial Roman assault, Neptune turned the tide.
What are you talking about? Anyway. This vicious attack on the sea...
I could dribble on for ages.
This vicious attack on the sea took place during his campaign in Britain, during which he also ordered his soldiers to... Well, let's see how that conversation may have gone. I say, Commander, bring yourself over here to me, won't you, as a good man?
Yes, sir. Cracchus, Germanius, Luther, Arminius, son of Antonius, Antonius, Germanius, Luther, Arminius, at your service, O Lord.
You can call me Jupiter today, Commander.
Yes, sir, your Jupiterness, sir.
Yes. Question, boy. You don't think I'm mad, do you, Commander? Only I hear some in the army might. I can't see what. Why?
Not at all, your Jupiterness. You are as sane as they come. It's all the other people who are mad, sir.
Oh, good man. It's just that I don't like being called mad, you see. I would have had you skinned alive.
Oh.
If you thought so, you see. No.
Very funny, sir.
No, I'm just joking, Commander, that's right. Imagine trying to fight the enemy if you had no skin on. That would be quite silly, don't you agree, Commander?
Yes, sir. Yes, indeed.
Oh, so you agree it was a silly idea?
No, sire. Nothing seems silly coming from yourself, your godliness.
Oh, good. Good. Now, look here, Commander. I have a task for you.
Excellent, your deadliness. Shall I gather the men and have them prepare to assault the secure, the nearest coastal town, sire?
Oh.
I can evaluate all the slaves and have them shipped by this evening, sire. Then presumably I will need to have the town fortified to establish the supply chain back to Gul before I get the engineers to mobilise the smaller siege engines, the larger siege engines, sire, as well as establishing contact with our local allies. Is this permissionable to yourself, sire?
It looks like you're the only mad one here, Commander, eh? I'm surprised at you. No. I want you to have the men gather these lovely shells here on the beach.
Shells,
huh? As spoils of war. Okay.
Seashells, sire.
Seashells, Commander. Aren't they beautiful? They remind me of my sister's eyes before I had them plucked from the socket.
Very well, sir. I'll get on with it immediately, your Jupiterness.
Capital.
So, if our previous assumption with his horses, consul, you know, shaming the Senate, it could be said that Caligula may have been trying to embarrass and shame his troops for not being willing to cross the channel and invade Britain. As you might expect, these acts can be portrayed and viewed differently.
Hmm.
The constantly crazy behaviour led to some pretty severe dissatisfaction amongst the populace and the ruling classes of Rome, the skittish Senate in particular. Rumours of this disloyalty began to reach the ever more deranged emperor.
Uh-oh.
And that's not good. In the light of this, a recently retired governor of Pannonia was ordered to commit suicide. Many would suffer the same fate.
Yeah, then Caligula considered plans to revive the expansionist campaigns of his father Germanicus across the Rhine.
So essentially invade the Germans across the Rhine.
Yeah, an extension of what his father had already done. But before he left Rome, he learnt that the army commander of Upper Germany, Cneius Cornelius Lentulus Gaetilicus...
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, was conspiring to have him assassinated.
In spite of this, Caligula set out to Germany in September AD 39. Accompanied by a strong detachment of his loyal Praetorian Guard and his sisters...
Right, now, hang on. Try and get this right. These are difficult ones.
Julia Agrippina.
Yep.
Julia Livilla.
That's... Yep.
Marcus Aemilius Lepidus.
That guy, yeah. He was the widower of Caligula's...
I always feel a sense of achievement to get each one of these words right.
Well, he was the last one there. He was the widower of Caligula's dead sister, Julia Drusilla.
Drusilla.
Yeah.
Right.
And soon after Caligula had arrived in Germany, not only... Gaetilicus, but also Lepidus, were put to death. And Julia Agrippina and Julia Livilla were banished and their property seized by the emperor.
So he was even killing his friends.
Yeah, well, he's not shy, is he?
Hmm.
The following winter, Caligula spent along the Rhine and in Gaul, but neither his planned German campaigns nor proposed military expedition to Britain ever took place.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a terrified Senate granted him all kind of honours for his imaginary victories. It comes as no surprise, then, that at least three further conspiracies were soon launched against Caligula's life.
Only a matter of time.
It was only a matter of time before one of them succeeded.
Yeah, and Caligula had a suspicion that his joint Praetorian prefix, Marcus Avicennus Clemens, bit of a strange last name there, and an unknown colleague were planning an assassination. They're starting to line up now.
Mm-hmm.
This prompted them, in order to avoid their execution, to join a group of senators in pursuing a plot. Uh-huh. So, you know, they're being forced to action here.
You don't just get senators plotting and the army plotting, you get them together. That's a dangerous combination.
It's starting to happen. The conspirators found a willing assassin in the Praetorian officer Cassius Chaerea, whom Caligula had openly mocked at court for his supposed effeminacy.
Oh. Yeah. Mind you, maybe for Cassius Chaerea, it was a career move.
Well, Caligula considered Chaerea effeminate because he had a weak voice and also for not being firm with tax collection. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
So you can imagine how he was probably mocked by Caligula. So in the 24th of January AD 41, Cassius Chaerea, together with two military colleagues, fell upon the emperor in a corridor in his palace. Some of his German personal guards rushed to his aid, but they came too late. Several Praetorians then swept through the palace, seeking to kill any surviving relatives. Caligula's fourth wife, Caesonia, was stabbed to death, and I'm afraid to say also her baby daughter was also killed.
Not a pretty situation. Well, the Senate attempted to use Caligula's death as an opportunity to restore the Republic. Chaerea attempted to convince the military to support the Senate in this. The military, though, remained loyal to the office of the Emperor, weren't interested in the Republic. It was good for them to have this guy in control and, mm-hmm. you know...
Made them important.
Yeah, they got paid well for him. Rather bizarrely, it's said that the grieving Roman people assembled and demanded that Caligula's murderers be brought to justice, although there are some accounts that say that they didn't believe he'd actually been killed. They thought it was a trick.
Yeah.
To root out, you know, naysayers. And so...
So everyone was pretending really, to be upset because they thought he was alive still.
Yeah.
And then when they really knew he was dead, they were probably relieved. But we don't know that for sure. Caligula's simpleton, stuttering uncle Claudius, however, did survive the onslaught of the killers by hiding. And when he was found by the Praetorian and the Senate, they made him the new emperor. Now, was he a good emperor?
Well, actually, some rate him in the top five.
Indeed, they did. Well, it goes to show that sometimes maybe having a more simplistic person running the country is a good thing.
Like an American president.
That's probably a bad example. So, is this crazy man to be too crazy to be true? The bulk of what is known of Caligula comes from Suetonius and Cassius Dio. Suetonius wrote his history on Caligula 80 years after his death, while Cassius Dio wrote his history over 180 years after the death of Caligula.
A handful of other sources add a limited perspective on Caligula. Josephus gives a detailed description of Caligula's assassination. How he knows that, who knows. Tacitus, yeah, very famous historian, provides some information on Caligula's life under Tiberius. In a now lost portion of the Annals, Tacitus gives a detailed history of Caligula. Pliny the Elder's Natural History has a few brief references to Caligula.
Yeah, so we know that there are a few surviving sources on Caligula, and no surviving source paints Caligula in a favourable light at all. With that in mind, we have to assume that many of these tales of him as a deeply tormented, deranged man are true, at least to a significant degree.
Yeah, and through his certifiable actions, in more way than one, Caligula must go down in history as one of the most notorious rulers ever to have gibbered mad orders at his cowering subordinates.
Yeah.
And while we don't believe the body count associated with his actions is as high necessarily as some of the more genocidal despots in history, his wanton disregard for human life, mercy and empathy in general, shows us a level to which absolute power can corrupt absolutely.
But it is important to note that surviving accounts of Caligula's reign were written by people who may have hated him for hoarding power and wasting resources on himself. While it's extremely possible that Caligula was a madman, writing slanderous accounts of insanity and sexual perversity was common. It's the same for Nero. People say he played his fiddle as Rome burned, but other sources say he personally helped in the evacuations.
Although, seeing as the fiddle wasn't invented yet, I'd say the story is probably false.
So, thanks again for listening to another historical podcast. We really enjoyed doing it, as always, and hope you found that interesting and informative. You can reach us again if you want to give us feedback. We really always appreciate feedback on Historical Pod. So, Wayne, that's
HistoricoOol Pod. And I'd just like to say also, we haven't been going for very long as a podcast. I know it's very difficult for listeners to sift through all the podcasts. There's so many great podcasts, but we've had some really brilliant feedback and comments already in this short period from some of you listeners out there. And I really appreciate that. And please keep them coming because we do pay attention to it. And also, if you have any subjects that you'd like us to focus on for future episodes, we'd love to hear it. So please use that Twitter account that we mentioned earlier. And aside from that, we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks again.